Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. Fresh off a holiday weekend, how did that go for you, T. Frank?
It was good. Yeah. Weddings are always fun. So we had a great holiday weekend. How about you?
Not too bad. Fairly quiet. Did a little bit of traveling, not far. Did it for just half of the weekend, then got back, did some recording for Monday's shows. And so it worked out perfect. Now I am ready. This is like the unofficial start to summer. So that always gets me pumped up. Get summer going. And before you know it, they'll be in fall camp getting ready for football season, T. Frank.
Whoa. We got 2 months left to go of recruiting and vacation for a lot of us. So let's hold off on the football talk. We got to savor this extra week of summer we got because Memorial Day was weirdly early this year. So, I'm team. Let's look at June and July and enjoy them for what they are, even though we are in the slowest time for football, for sure, from the team perspective.
Well, what we do have going on, though, T. Frank, is the arrival of the last of the freshmen are coming in. And, it's funny. Last week we talked about redshirt freshmen, and every year I want to do that because I always say that is the group that gets forgotten, okay? You start worrying about the shiny new toys, the new recruits, which this group we're going to talk about fits that category. But over these last several years, so many of the recruits are coming in early. They're coming in January. And yep. It seems like those are the elite recruits. It seems that way. And it's also the majority of them. We kind of forget these guys who don't come in till later, T. Frank.
Yeah, that is becoming the norm, is that you arrive in January. And it's sometimes there are certain schools that have a different calendar, so they go into June and they don't allow you to graduate early. So some of that, it's circumstantial based on the high school they go to and if they have enough credits to graduate. So it is baked into the recruiting process now, because if you can, kind of like college, if you can take classes ahead, then suddenly you're on a pace to move on to the next step earlier. But I wouldn't say it's just the elite recruits, it's the ones, but there is kind of that correlation between the ones that are preparing to do it for their whole high school career, and then there are the ones who have different circumstances, I'd say.
Yeah, I think that is the case. A lot of them anticipate this now ahead of time. And I remember when this first happened, the early recruits coming in, and I was like, how does this happen? Never. That's unheard of, graduating high school early. Now it's kind of the norm. Just for the numbers, Penn State had 16 of the class of 25 arriving in January, 9 of them arriving this summer. That's a significant number. Just by the math, you're going to get more of the stars coming in also besides the ones who are planning it out. So let's get right to it then, T. Frank. Let's start to talk about these players. And I thought we could group them a little bit when they are – there's a position commonality. And because I think it's relevant what positions they are in and how easy it is to get started. But one last question. Just first of all, how important is it for a young player, if he wants to get on the field, to arrive in January?
It's turned what was a non-starter into a conversation you can have with every recruit, that you have the opportunity to play as a freshman if you get here in January, because there are the added benefits of being in an off-season program, you know, at Penn State, from a physical building perspective, from a weight room perspective. Then you have the mental transition of being in the offense or the defense earlier and understanding that there is no shortcut through time with learning and with certain processes like that we're talking about, where you have to go through the growth process, because you can't just download all the data all at once and know all the things you need to know. So that time on task of being at the school, being integrated into what they're doing, gives you the ability to pick up the offense or defense and have an opportunity to let the physical side take over what you do have. And some guys is close enough where they come in prepared. Players are coming in more prepared than ever from high school from a physical perspective, because nutrition and training, all those things are filtering down at the high school level. So it has accelerated this process to where we have the conversation every fall about which guys are getting the green light and which guys are going to get the yellow light. And that's, you know, it's being here in now, May, June, doesn't preclude that from happening, but it makes it a serious conversation when you get there in January.
Let's also, just one last question before we get started. How important, how relevant is position also to play early?
The more grown man strength you need at a position, the longer it's going to take to get on the field. Again, which is why Cooper Cousins is such a ridiculous story so far, and one that you don't see at any Power 5 school, Power 4 school, excuse me, is that... I don't want to speak ill of the dead. You know, want to remember them properly. RIP Pac-12. The ability for a freshman, 18-year-old, to come in and compete against guys who are potentially going to the NFL next year at that sort of position is massive, and it's a huge undertaking. So guys who can do it are really impressive, and the more you need to know is the other part. So certain positions, running back comes to mind, where it's an instinctive position, as opposed to the detailed knowledge of your skills, like a receiver. As much as they can play early, it's probably going to be in a very limited sense, as opposed to somebody who is going to be your number one receiver that knows all the routes and how to beat all the coverages.
Okay, well, let's see. You brought up Cooper Cousins, so let's start with offensive linemen. I have two of them listed as coming in this summer, T. Frank, and that's Caleb Brewer and Donovan Harbor. Again, I think based on what you're talking about, playing against grown-ass men, you know, at the offensive line, that's a tough position to come in early, and Cooper Cousins is an outlier.
Yeah, so the two guys who have a little bit of a different path ahead of them, Caleb Brewer needs to get bigger, and Donovan Harbor needs to continue to trim his weight from where he was as a junior to whatever his kind of natural base body weight is, so they can build him back up. So those guys are going to be going in opposite directions for a while. And with Brewer, it is interesting. Like, you hear old school fans or wrestling fans that like football say, I love an offensive or defensive lineman that is a wrestler because of the leverage they understand, all of those things that go into contact balance and being able to manipulate blocks and all those translatable skills. Everyone knows that wrestling is a pretty dense weight, right? So it's good weight, but you do need to get into that growth process then if you're a guy like Caleb Brewer that's been holding back for so long from your physical development as far as mass goes. So there's some give and take with those early profiles from players in high school. And for him too, it's not just that physical transition. It's he's got to learn the offensive line position, because he was basically, I mean, he plays offensive lineman, a six offensive lineman role for while missing, but he's also a guy that's running pass patterns and is very little information or knowledge as how to pass block in a modern offense. So there's quite a development curve for both of those guys coming in as the summer enrollees for Penn State.
And you mentioned like Caleb Brewer, he comes from, he's the same school as Javen Williams, right?
Yes. They're both from Wyomissing.
So that was the same discussion with Javen Williams. Didn't have to worry about pass protection at their high school with the offense they were playing.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of differences too in terms of formations and the offensive line and how they block and they set up and their rules. So you get the baseline of these guys are super athletic. And that's the other part of this conversation is Caleb Brewer, despite some of his physical dimensions, not the prototype offensive line prospect from a length or size standpoint, but he's a great athlete. His testing numbers are phenomenal, and that's the reason he's a Penn State commit, because it doesn't matter where they wanted to play him, they wanted that athlete on the field, and he's going to, you know, there was some conversation. Maybe he would have been a defensive lineman at one point, but I don't think that's going to be the case down the line. So he's a very good athlete, just like Javen Williams, who just came in at a larger size than Caleb Brewer did.
And then Donovan Harbor, he's from Wisconsin, right? He's part of that Wisconsin group.
Yes, same high school as Corey Smith, not as Garrett Sexton. So not they're not all from the same high school, but they are from that Wisconsin contingent. Yeah, and he had some really good tape as far as kind of the opposite of I like some of his pass blocking awareness. You know, when you're a young offensive lineman, we're looking for the very basics. Like, are you aware that there are more people on the field than your assigned defender? Like, can you keep your head on a swivel, essentially? And I thought he had good awareness as a left tackle, as a guy who clearly had too much weight, but was still moving well and operating. So he's got a lot of, I don't even want to say it's hidden potential, because obviously he's got the potential to be at Penn State. A lot of schools identified him on early. So it's just about bringing all of those traits out and seeing to me, like, what does translate from his high school film, where they ran the ball a lot at his high school, and they did a lot of, I'd say, good offensive concepts. It's not kind of it wasn't very simple. He had to pull. There was a exposures to different styles of blocking. And, you know, I think he's got some good fundamentals, like, that he's building on of what he knows and how he can do it. And now he's just got to, you know, again, work to get all those things better.
And it's interesting, the two players, as you started the talk about the two players, that they need to go in opposite directions. One needs to put on weight. The other needs to lose weight and then get it recreated, the body. T. Frank, real quick, it looked for a while like the offensive line recruits, there was a trend. They liked them long and lean. Mm-hmm. Having two players like this so different, is it just, hey, we're looking for the best potential player?
Yes. You know, but there are certain aspects of both of those guys that fit the Penn State offensive line profile. So the length is always desired at all of these positions. And Harbor, despite being 6'3", 6'4", he's got the elite reach you're looking for. They're not afraid of power players. Vega Ioane, JB Nelson, these are some big dudes who were big in their recruiting process. The tackles, I think, are the difference from where it used to be if Penn State recruited a lot of guys who were, they could play four or five positions. And now Penn State with Phil Troutwine, and I think some of the things they're able to do from a recruiting perspective, they can recruit two different body types and fit them into the long-term plan.
All right. Very good, T. Frank. That's it for quarter number one. We got through two of the players. There's seven more to go. Stick around. We'll get back to it in quarter number two.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership, with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is T. Frank Carr. T. Frank, we are talking about the players in this incoming class who are just showing up now during the summer. There's nine of them compared to the 16 who arrived in January. We talked in quarter number one about the offensive linemen that made their way here. Caleb Brewer, Donovan Harbor are those two. You mentioned that Donovan Harbor came from the same high school as a teammate, incoming freshman, Corey Smith, the running back. So let's yep. go there. Let's segue to him. Now, I think of offensive line as a place. Cooper Cousins, he's the exception to the rule. Let's just understand that, everybody. Do not expect that very often. However, now shifting to running back, T. Frank, that's a position where we have seen players show up and get on the field as true freshmen. Now, we saw that fairly recently with Nick Singleton and Catron Allen. But if you remember, it wasn't like the first couple games. They kind of worked their way to dominating it. But there is an opening for the third running back, T. Frank. Mm-hmm. Corey Smith have a shot at it?
I mean, anyone has a shot. And to say absolutely flatly no, is just set yourself up to be exposed at some point when random stuff happens. But Corey Smith, let's talk about what he is and what we don't know. And I think the main thing is he was hurt a lot his senior season, so we didn't get to see kind of that development from him. And the running back position, part of that is the physical development you do before your freshman season, where if you're big enough and you're athletic enough, you can make that transition and you can do certain things. Especially if you've got speed, and that's what Corey Smith has. He's a fast running back, but I want to know where he's arriving on campus from a physical perspective. Like, you know, we haven't listed at 5'11", 175. We haven't checked in, at least I haven't checked in to see where all of those numbers are from a growth standpoint. So if he's coming in closer to 190, you know, that's something, that's a different conversation than he's coming in at 178, and, you know, that's a much longer road for a running back who's built more like a wide receiver at that point. So he's got the skill set of he's a good receiver. He's fast. He's elusive. But he, you know, from what we saw of him in high school, at least the last time I got to see significant chunks of his playing, was that he's not going to be a massive running back at any point. He's not going to be a Nick Singleton or, you know, some of the bigger backs that Penn State's had. He'll be big enough for sure. He won't be small, but he's a little on the leaner side from his build perspective.
And as we learned last year or earlier this year when James Franklin was talking about the running backs, London Montgomery, what he talked about is he did not change his body like, say, Cam Wallace did. You know, mm-hmm. Cam Wallace got himself big enough to take on a Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, and that's going to be the interesting thing, because I don't know the injury situation for Corey Smith of where he was in his recovery this off season to try and get to that point. Because the thing about like lifting weights and getting bigger is you can't pack on pounds naturally at a highly accelerated rate. So again, another thing that just takes the time and the effort to get there. If you're not being efficient from January to now, you're not going to make enough strides. There's not enough time to then make where you want to be by the time you get to August or September, when that competition matters.
And again, that's another example of why getting here in January is a great advantage.
Yeah.
Doing this with Chuck Losey and the strength and conditioning staff, it's a lot easier to change your body and develop that weight and do it the right way, combined with the nutrition, the strength buildup. Let's stay on the offensive side of the ball, T. Frank. And this one could be interesting, and that's at wide receiver, because it has shown in the past to be possible as a wide receiver to get there as a freshman and get on the field. Two, I think, very interesting wide receiver candidates. One of them is Peter Gonzalez. He's from, I believe, the Pittsburgh area. Yep. Pretty big guy for a wide receiver, but I believe he also dealt with some injury issues. The other is Tyzer Denmark. Mm-hmm. He's coming in from the Philly side of the state. He also, you know, and some fans got very excited. He put up big numbers in the Big 33 game, T. Frank.
Yeah.
What are you seeing from those two players?
Yeah, so Peter Gonzalez goes to Pittsburgh Central Catholic, same school as Anthony Speca, a linebacker in this class. And it depends on where you sit in what you're looking for from a wide receiver and who you feel like could be the guy who contributes early, if either have a path to that. The player they need more is Peter Gonzalez. But at this point, I don't think it matters really, because both positions are open for another player to come in and compete if they are good enough to leapfrog older players on the depth chart at that receiver position. But The point here is Peter's an outside receiver and Tysier is a slot receiver. So which one of those skill sets translates to the field faster? And Tysier has the advantage of being, I think, better at the position right now in terms of his route running, his separation, his understanding of leverage, and some of those aspects. But he does not have the complete skill set of Peter Gonzalez. I haven't been excited about a wide receiver prospect in a while like I have been for Peter Gonzalez, because he is potentially the complete package. And you mentioned some of the injury stuff that he went through before his junior season, I think it was. He tore his ACL. And so he was playing that year on, I think it was 6 months post-surgery or something like that, or maybe it was just 9 months post-surgery, which is like the earliest you can return to play. So that lateral cutting agility and is he a complete route runner? We didn't see any of that on his junior season film, and he wasn't fast and explosive. Fast forward to his senior year, and he's so fast and explosive that they don't use him on a complete route tree. So we get to the same spot where that Pittsburgh Catholic offense was so explosive and dominant. He was basically the guy who runs so many deep routes that you have to give him so much room that he can just catch bubble screens the rest of the time. And that was his route tree. So can he cut laterally? Does he understand the breadth of the position? His dad's a former NFL quarterback, so you feel good about the push and the drive behind him to do all these things and get all that information. The question, again, just is, does he have the underlying information and knowledge to run those routes, even though we haven't seen him do it? And that's something I can't answer. And that's something I think that Penn State players are finding out right now during the summer lifting and workout sessions that the players run themselves.
And then you have Tysier Denmark. It's interesting, T. Frank, and this is me paying attention to you, okay? You may not think I do, but I do. I'm aware that you've been pretty high on Peter Gonzalez for a while, and so that has made me well aware of him and mm-hmm. and watching him. But it seems like if you read the rest of the media, and I don't know how much effect this Big 33 game was, but I think it feels like other people are more excited about Tysier Denmark and think he's the one who yeah. could make a push. Yeah.
So it's unfair to say X, Y, or Z in a comparative sense, but they are interestingly comparable prospects because they are dichotomies of each other. Tysier Denmark, it has feet like I haven't seen in a while. His ability to create separation, his lightning quick movement skills are a difference maker for him. They are a defining trait, a separator, something that is going to be what he does at the highest levels of football he can achieve. But right now he's not very fast. So you put him in a straight line and ask him to run faster than somebody else, he'll maybe the first 5 yards race ahead, but he doesn't have that consistent explosiveness in his frame for whatever reason to then create game-changing plays. But if you want him to catch a 5-yard slant, I think I'd throw it to him above maybe even some of the guys on the Penn State roster right now. So that's the conversation that I think everyone's excited about. Is at one point he was an Oregon commit. He was a very highly rated, highly recruited prospect. To me, when I watch the film, I see he's 5'10 and he's not explosively fast. You know, 4.4s speed. So to me, that's a profile that at some point reaches a ceiling. And it's just whether he reaches that ceiling halfway through his freshman year and that's good enough to play and be a difference maker on the offense, or, you know, is he able to get faster? Is he able to expand what he can do? And so those are kind of the nuanced differences between the two and how either could translate better to the next level. But Denmark, from a we know what he can do, we see what he can do, there's a legitimate reason to be excited about what that is, because it is a player who can contribute early. But is it difference-making contribution, and is that too high of a ceiling for me to even question? But that's where the hype goes, right? The hype goes too far, so when you've got people thinking he's going to be the savior of the offensive receiver room, no, that won't be the case. He could contribute, but at what level and what's his role?
I've stopped thinking in terms of savior and freshman long ago, T. Frank. That just doesn't...
Listen, hope is a drug, and you can't get some people off of hope. And we'll see. That's always... And then the come down off of that sometimes is rough for everybody.
Hope is not a strategy. All right, let's quickly get someone in from the defensive side. Let's start with cornerback Kenny Wosley.
He's a guy that, kind of like Tysier Denmark, is specific. And we have a good feeling of we know he is going to be a slot corner, maybe a slot corner only. Maybe he's the next Daquan Hardy. But he's a super smart kid. He gets football, and that's what you need from a slot corner. Theoretically, another guy who could, again, push for the higher side of four games and a red shirt. We kind of look at all those guys the same, but it's not necessarily all the same in terms of how many snaps are you getting in a game as opposed to you technically got in the game. Whether it was for four snaps or for 20 at the end of it, he might be a guy who could push into getting more snaps because the coaching staff trusts him more, and a guy who could transition quickly to that role. But this, as far as playing, there's a lot of guys in front of him in that nickel position.
And that's always going to be the question. It's not just about how much talent you have, but what opportunity there is at the position. All right, Team Frank, that's it for quarter two. Stick around quarter three. It's your questions. And we ask T. Frank.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. Quarter three, you know what it means. It's time to ask T. Frank. We've got your questions for T. Frank. If you want to send a question in to T. Frank, real easy. Just download our app, Keystone Sports. Go to your app store. It's there, Keystone Sports, and you'll see the Ask T. Frank button. Ready to roll, T. Frank?
Yep. Well, we'll see. The questions always determine that.
Okay, let's start with Barry in Wilmington, who says, I know you're high on Ethan Grunkmeyer. With Smolak out, he's one step closer to playing. What is your take on his progress and readiness to play?
I just haven't seen enough, and that's where kind of what I do is only what I see from. So there are people who probably have seen more or people who have talked to people who have seen more. I can tell you the people I've spoken with, I have been, I think, fairly consistently high on Ethan Grunkmeyer through the process since I first saw him, what was it, last spring at this point. He's got some difference-making intangibles from a football field perspective. I think he's smart enough. I guess the question is, like, are we saying, you know, he's going to see playing time this year? Are we saying that they're going to need him? The conversation around these freshman quarterbacks, I think, is kind of, what are we all saying the same thing? Are we all on the same page of, it's good to be excited about these guys, but being the starting quarterback, understanding the offense, commanding the offense, these are all very hard things to do and to do even if you arrive in January. So, yes, I'm very excited to see what he can do, and I think he's got NFL potential, just like Drew Aller. May look different, but he is another guy who I think can command an offense, understands the underlying principles, and not just can find a guy on his first read and get open, or he can extend a play and make a play. These are guys who, from the cerebral level, do all of the hard work. And I think Ethan, at this point, without seeing more of him, to know where he is on that progression of understanding the offense, are those traits I saw in high school translating to his play right now? Because Jackson Smolak has those too. That's the thing I want everyone to remember. He may not have the physical size. He might not have some of the arm strength things, but he throws a really good deep ball, and he might be the most clutch of these high school quarterbacks I've seen, where he did, and this is always going to happen until somebody else does this, McSorley-esque qualities of late game execution in big moments. And the stage that you're on is always the biggest stage until the next one. So how he does there, we'll see with both of these guys, but I think they both got that quality.
I think, Barry's pointing out that Smolik, it sounds like he's out for the season.
Yeah, we're expecting him. It's one of those situations we're expecting him not to be a part of the conversation, even if, like, there's no injured reserve. So if he makes a progress that is better than expected, he could return to practice. He could return to, whatever form of being with the team. But, expecting him to be on the field when you've got other healthy options, even as the third quarterback, probably not realistic, for sure.
And that's the other part to this. If a third quarterback gets on the field, something went terribly wrong.
Yeah.
But, it's not unprecedented to have a third quarterback necessary. One guy gets injured and is out for several weeks.
Yeah.
Then you're just, one heartbeat away, T-Frank, or one twisted ankle away, or one helmet comes off on a play from getting on the field. So Barry's right. He is one step closer if Smolik is not an option.
To address the underlying fear behind the question, they are in a situation where there's no Christian Veyer and Taquan Roberson situation here. You don't want to put a freshman on the field. Like, that's just, you don't want to put a freshman quarterback on the field. Most of them, it's not going to be pretty. But I'm confident Ethan could get them through a game in terms of being able to operate the offense, and everyone else carries it, but he can turn the car on and off. And so can Smolik at this point. And I think that's kind of the competency level of the depth of the room. You should feel confident these guys are going to be able to, if needed, step in for a couple of series if something catastrophic does go down like we talked about.
Yeah, and I think that's the nature of Barry's question, or at least I'm taking it that way. Let's go to Larry in Montgomery, who says, looking ahead to the 2025 season. Larry's not even worried about 2024, T-Frank.
Oh, cool.
Looking ahead to the 2025 season, with Singleton and Allen most likely gone, what does the running back room look like?
It's wide open. And that's why you've got so many contenders that are going to be vying for those snaps. I made the joke that the real competition in the blue-white game wasn't for the third running back in 2024. It was for the lead guy in 2025, because whoever's ahead and consistently stays ahead, that's the way it seems to go that way in either in football or just for Penn State, because I don't closely follow any other programs to know exactly how those coaching staffs work. But it seems like a guy who's ahead and has more information typically stays ahead, and that length of time of progression and understanding is necessary. So if you're Quentin Martin and you're ahead right now, and Corey Smith, and you're now having to catch up, there's plenty of time to catch up. But there's all that lead is something you have to dig into. You have, because those guys are competing now for 2025, jockeying for position. And for those guys, the Cam Wallaces of the world that don't want to get passed up, they have to keep their pedal to the metal and keep making strides so that you don't lose ground to some of these very talented players coming in behind you. Because 2025, it's all wide open right now, which is why you're seeing three running backs coming in the class next year, too.
And, yeah, that will make it even more wide open. But to your point, yes, there's the pecking order. And if you're the third guy this season, that means you're more likely to get onto the field. You get that experience. That puts you just gives you such a great advantage. Okay, let's let's see. Let's go with Ed in Middleton, who says, James Franklin is often criticized for his game day decisions. What do you see as his best on-field attribute? Not the other stuff, recruiting, relationship building, but his on-field coaching.
So there's a couple of things here that I think there's a nuance that we have to understand here. I appreciate his willingness to embrace information. And that comes from his own interpretation of the information, his relationship with the information that he's getting, both from analytic sources and how he's applied those things. So I like the idea that he's aggressive and that he tries to maximize the possessions, the two-minute warning at the second half, you know, trying to get extra possessions in the game. Those are the building blocks of winning decisions. The execution of them sometimes is not clean. And I think there's some things, I think about a Maryland game, I think from 2022, where there was a very awkward transition at the end of the half where they wanted to see if they can get in position for a field goal. And the mismanagement of the clock, to me, was more about indecision of your risk tolerance in that moment. It wasn't that James Franklin didn't know he needed to save time with his timeouts. It was he willing to throw the football? And so that push and pull of what are we doing here, the thoughts are all correct, in my opinion, in terms of how to interpret the situations. But the execution at times can be hot and cold because I think he's an emotional dude that reacts to the information, even though he knows he shouldn't. So you have the cold, hard data of here's what goes on in these situations of fourth down situations, change of possession, explosive plays, all this information. And the goal is to correctly apply it at the right times. And I think James Franklin can get hot and cold in terms of one of the evolutions I think that he's seen in data, or at least what he's leaned into, is the number of drives that start inside the 20 that result in points is also very low. So yes, you want to maximize your own scoring, but if you can put them in a situation where they have a worse opportunity to score, you're doing your job, and hence we've seen this pivot, I think, to more defensive-minded decisions from James Franklin. But then there's that knee-jerk reaction of wanting to score points. So it's that push and pull of the conflicting ideas and information. I respect his willingness to see all of it, and it's kind of navigating the course through which points are important right now and sticking to those things, I think, has been the frustration for fans. That's the underlying problem as opposed to he doesn't know what he's doing. I think that's always been a misinterpretation of the situation.
T. Frank, this is an interesting topic, and you and I have talked about this a little bit off the air. Candidly, I think it's a good topic for us one of these shows during the summer. I like the way you put it, that he has embraced analytics. What I find fascinating sometimes, though, is the fan base and even the media makes the mistake of judging it by the result.
Yeah, it's fourth down.
Go ahead.
And ultimately, so you are the product of your own destruction, or you reap what you sow in this situation of football. At its core, is a results-based business where coaches don't care whatever the reasoning behind you not getting the play done. If you don't get the play done enough, you're replaced. And coaches have the same relationship with the media and fans. It's just there isn't that understood language of from the internal versus the external. But it is funny that we have that lack of understanding, but the same standards applied. And I think that does come a little bit from how coaches talk about players in the game.
Well, also, the example that I brought up before, I'm sure on the show, but I think it's worth it again, the Michigan game. Two scores behind. You needed to go for 2 points, either on this score or the next one, and everyone really crushed him for going for 2 points on the first try, which left the team 9 points behind. Oh, you now need 2 scores. What a dumb decision. Actually, the decision was correct to go for it. Statistically, analytically, that was the right time to do it, T. Frank. He got crushed for it. And by the way, I was in the press box. That wasn't just the fans who were complaining about it.
Yeah, and so but this is the disconnect of information, and James Franklin is working with, I think, more information from here's what we know about the data, and then everyone else is going off of, historical, handed down tradition stuff. I do have something I want to address part of this conversation in the next segment.
We will pick that up as soon as we start quarter number four, right after this message.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number four. He's T. Frank. I'm Jim. And as has become a bit of a habit, T. Frank, we get a question, a good question in our Ask T. Frank segment, and it kind of spills over into quarter number four. We were talking about James Franklin and his use of analytics. Sometimes he's criticized for it. I know you wanted to add something to that conversation.
The interesting part about all of these perceptions in football and in sports in general is we gauge these men, mostly men, off of their decisions in the worst possible situations. So, you know, gut check time. We when it comes down to the winning and the losing of the game, that's we heavily weigh those moments. And most of the time, I guess at least recently, the flavor has been when you're down but in the game, in the final few minutes, how do you maximize your opportunity to win? And there's the conservative, traditionalist ideas of delay until you have the ball last and you can kick a field goal to win or whatever, right? And then there's what we've talked about in terms of the analytics of aggressively go for points so you know how many you need by the end. And I guess this to me is like it comes off from my seat where I'm not trying to weigh those plays when I'm doing the analysis more than a play in the second quarter on second and seven. The decisions in my mind are the same in terms of you've got to beat a coverage or a run front to get yards and points. And so it all comes off as like experts in apocalypse management. Why are we focusing on the worst case scenario and thriving there instead of winning the football game in the third quarter where you're the team in the lead? And that's really to me where James Franklin needs to get better and this offense needs to get better is that part. And then we can have a fair conversation of battling down with one hand tied behind your back with a sophomore quarterback or whatever the situation is. Those are unbelievably hard, and you would like to be successful in every situation, but I think the focus needs to be more on what got you in that situation in the first place instead of how James Franklin uses his timeouts when they already don't have a chance to win the game because their offensive passing attack is impotent. And so like these are the things that I view as these are the serious things we should consider. But then when we talk about James Franklin, the coach, we only focus on how is he when he's in the bunker and the bomb is already falling.
Exactly. Very good point. I'm going to throw in one more for you because my take off in T. Frank is coaches are judged on their decision making by the result, not on the decision. Yeah. And I'll use a different example. Bill Belichick is one of the guys with enough confidence to do what he thinks is right. And I've recently seen this segment on social media. Tom Brady in his first Super Bowl, I think he was a rookie, game tied, not much time left, had to go the length of the field with a tie. John Madden was the announcer then saying, you just sit on the ball, you play for overtime. Don't put the young quarterback in the position to make the mistake that will lose the game for you. Well, that's not what Belichick does. They march down the field, kick the game-winning field goal. Now, had Brady made the mistake, turn the ball over and they lose the game, Bill Belichick would have been crushed for that decision. But he had the guts and willingness to do what he felt was right, as opposed to coaching not to get second guessed later. Yeah. If he had just sat on the ball, went overtime and lost the game, nobody would have second guessed him on his decision, because that's what you traditionally do. You played it safe. So that happens with James Franklin also. All right, T. Frank, let's get back to our topic of the day. We're talking about those incoming freshmen. Let's hit it. We were on the defensive side. We got Kenny Wolseley in. Let's stay in the defensive backfield. Safety, DeJuan Lane.
A wild card to me in terms of what Penn State is getting out of the box. I feel like I have a pretty good idea of most of these guys from how they play. But DeJuan Lane is in a situation where he is so dominant against his level of competition that he can get away with certain things and he can not do other things and still be so good. You know, he's a guy who is 6'2 and explosive. His 100-meter dash time was a 10.66, so we're talking about a guy who runs in the 4.4s. As a freshman. So those are the skills we talk about where that's all set. You know, he could walk onto the Penn State football field and be competitive as a safety from an athletic standpoint. But what does he know? How does he know the position? What has he been working on in his own football development from a technique and understanding standpoint to transition all of that, like, eye-popping, goo-goo, gaga speed and size to the football field? There were some things that I didn't like in his junior film from a play style perspective that we're just never going to know until he gets tested at this level. So those are the things with him that I think are interesting. Of, here's a guy who is on, if he were at Penn State early, we might have this conversation of like a Tony Rojas level prospect his first year, maybe Jameel Lyons from a physical talent perspective, but then I think he's a big wild card on the intangible side, because there's a lot of projection that I have to do watching the way he plays in high school.
Well, there's a sliver of an opening in that safety room with King Mack transferring.
Yeah,
but you know you've got at least three really good players that are in front of you, and you've got to deal with that if you want to get on the field.
He has the physical ability to play any of the three positions, and that's his biggest benefit. Is Vabu Touré, he's going to be a box player, a box adjacent player. Dakari Nelson, in the situation of just young guys we're talking about here, he's big and fast. He's maybe not as fast as Lane, but he can still maybe play two or three, maybe two positions. But Lane is one of the few guys that I could see. Playing all three of the positions, kind of like King Mack, other than he's 6'2 and not 5'9 or 5'10.
Okay, let's move to the linebacker position, and that is Anthony Speca. Well, first of all, is he an inside guy, outside guy at linebacker?
So there's not much of a difference anymore. If we're going to talk about this defense as a nickel defense, they're both box linebackers. So then it becomes, are you the better athlete of who's ever in the class? And Speca, I think, has some blitzing tendencies, some kamikaze tendencies to be a good will linebacker, but the athleticism, the range, the body length, you know, the arm length, things like that are going to be the determining factors here. I see him more as a Mike, but maybe not as big as some of the guys they brought in recently. But I could see there are some traits and some skills, depending on how he physically develops from an athleticism standpoint, whether or not he fits that will position.
Gotcha. Now, there's some thought that the linebacker position isn't overly deep. We're not talking about the guy starting. Even look at like Tony Rojas last year, who we all thought was a pretty special player. He was still just a rotation piece who would come in. I think the question becomes, and even when I say something like the two deep, T. Frank, that might be different at linebacker this year. It's not too deep necessarily of three guys. Is it too deep of two players?
Yeah. So do you need 5, or do you need 4, or do you need even like a really strong 3 where you've got 2 starters and a guy that can play either position and you view almost as a starter? So that's, I think, where they're trying to work this out with this young group of linebackers. And, Kari Jackson was here in the spring. He played in the blue-white game, and I mean, he was in the offense. Linebacker's really, really hard. If there's a mental, physical demand position that has a higher stress level, like they're trying to do it to the safeties. Offensive coordinators are trying to creep down the field to make safety play impossible. But linebacker play, these guys aren't as fast. They're bigger, but they're still supposed to cover, and they're still supposed to understand on a deep fundamental level, not just where I'm supposed to be in a defense from an alignment perspective with the defensive line, but also in your coverage, how to best maximize your position for both of those and the intuitive understanding of what's coming at you. Linebackers, and like, it is hard. And for one of these two young guys to play early, I think is unrealistic. If Kari Jackson is on the field, having gone through spring practice, Anthony Speca, while I love his mind for the game, it was also kind of a raw, kind of chasing tires sort of attacking mentality as a football player that I think he's got to nail down some of his understanding of read keys and stuff like that. So both guys that aren't projecting into the two deep this year, like we've seen from some of the linebackers in previous recruiting classes.
And T. Frank, this is why I always like to have that conversation about redshirt freshmen, just in general with this conversation. We forget about those guys. But remember, they've been there at least a full year, if not a year and a half, getting reps, learning the offense or learning the defense, that these true freshmen just do not have that time in yet. All right, last player. Let's go to defensive end. I'm not going to butcher his first name. I'm going to let you do it, T. Frank. Williams coming in as a defensive end.
Malachi. So it's intimidating to look at, but it's just Malachi. Malachi Williams, another guy who is a huge projection to me, but a guy who at defensive end, you want raw traits when you can get them. He's a little thinner, and I'm curious to see what his end growth potential is in terms of, when I say thinner, I mean he doesn't have a big boxy upper body and huge thick waist. He's a little, I don't even want to say tapered, because he's not even 230 pounds yet. So understanding where his growth potential is an open conversation. 6'3", great arm length, great movement skills and burst. And it's all, how does he physically develop, which is going to take place starting whenever he gets on campus and really accelerate in the offseason. But not a guy that you see from a traits perspective making an impact his freshman season, because we have him listed at 217 right now. He might be 225, and he's still going to be 30 pounds away from what he should be for the finished product as a defensive lineman. So lots of upside, he's a guy for the future that you feel good about the development curve, but understand that it's both physical and mental and the X's and O's side for Malachi Williams.
And you also have a depth chart that at defensive end where you'd have to jump over a lot of people to get onto the field, T. Frank.
Yeah, that's a king of the hill that I don't know you're going to have any sort of chance of getting. The hill is already full of people vying for it.
Very good. All right, T. Frank, that is it for the show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.